Welcome to episode one of Rebel Rat Records. I'm here with Stephen Wakefield, better known as Wacker. How are you doing, Wacker?
I've just finished work.
You just finished work.
And it's tiring as us rock and rollers, you know. No rest for the wicked.
No rest for the wicked. So let's just kickstart into it. So, you know, what actually got you into punk?
What got me into punk? Believe it or not, Bebop Deluxe, the band Bebop Deluxe. Because I was listening to Alan Freeman Rock Show on a Saturday afternoon. Oh, God, way back when. Because they were going to do a Bebop Deluxe Radio 1 session. The radio was on and Alan Freeman had a habit of playing a record and not telling you who it was by until afterwards. And he put this record on, played this track, absolutely electrified me. It was something I've never heard the likes of it before. And at the end of the record he said, that was our "Don't Want to Go Down to the Basement" by the Ramones. So that was my first bona fide bit of punk music. Funnily enough, I went to get the album the following week, and it hadn't been released in the UK because I think it had just come out in America. But I did get it on import. It came out a few weeks later on, and that would have been July 1976. A good few months before the UK, the New Rose and all the rest of it came out. So that's what got me into punk. I mean, before that, I had a New York Dolls single, and I had the New York Dolls album, one of the albums on cassette that my friend had taped for me, and I had Raw Power by the Stooges on a cassette.
Mm-hmm.
But that's sort of punk influenced. It wasn't sort of
punk. Proto-punk,
The Ramones, to be honest with you, I don't think even the phrase punk had been sort of coined until sort of a few months after, when somebody out the Sounds of the NME started using the word punk.
Yeah, to coin.
I mean, after the Ramones, obviously New Rose. Got to give the Saints a mention for I'm Stranded. That was a great record. And of course, being in the Northeast, you read in the Sounds and the NME about these bands, but because you couldn't buy the music, you just had to read about them. And it sounded exciting, they looked great. And I mean, I wasn't disappointed when we got to hear the majority of the bands as sort of musical output. It was a great time, that.
So aside from, you know, you mentioned the New York Dolls single, mm-hmm. things like that, what did you think of the New York Dolls?
Loved them. I couldn't believe why they weren't more popular, but maybe looking back, I know, because they were totally out there. I mean, they made David Bowie look square, look boring to an extent. I saw them on the Old Grey Whistle Test. I crept downstairs. I knew they were on the Old Grey Whistle Test, and I crept downstairs. My mum and dad had gone to bed to watch them on the Old Grey Whistle Test when they did Jet Boy. I think they might have done another song. I can't remember. And watched them with the sound on very, very low. And I remember thinking how absolutely brilliant they looked, even though it's bordering on comical now, but yeah. how fantastic they looked, and they sounded great. The New York, and I finally got to see the New York Dolls. It's like the number 27 bus. Didn't see them for 30 odd years, and I saw them three times in the space of like 6 months or something. They did three nights at the Clooney in Newcastle.
All right.
Just about 10 years ago, they played the O2 in Newcastle. I think I saw them in Edinburgh as well. Oh, the first time I saw them was in Edinburgh. Oh, might have been 10 years ago. Then they did a couple of gigs after that, which was fortunate enough to see the remaining members anyway.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the Ramones album.
Brilliant.
First punk album you bought.
I think so. It's probably the first punk album anybody bought up in the Northeast. Brilliant. And I bought the subsequent End of the Century, might have been the last one I got, but the first four or five, with the exception of the odd crack and track, I think, to be honest, the first four or five, you need them, but
yeah,
the rest are all, if you've got a bit of spare cash, why not?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Ramones, I got to see them, I think I saw them in 1977, 78, 79. I saw them a few times, but I can't remember. It's that long ago, but I saw them at the City Hall a couple of times. The last time I saw them was at the Mayfair, and it would have been around 1990-91.
Mm-hmm.
The Ramones were massive. I mean, to me, they were fantastic. A lot more you can say about the Ramones other than you know, it's like furniture. Every house, you know, you need a chair, you need a table.
Yeah.
Every house should have at least one Ramones album. It should be law.
Well, I've got two of them, so Rock and Russia and the debut. Yeah. So obviously moving on a bit further during punk's highlight, going back to like sort of 79, 80 when post punk was at its strong point. Was that something that you got into quite easily?
Easily. Yes, because throughout 1970s, I mean, we'd spoke before, Daniel, about, to me, 1977, 1978, 1979, I was so lucky to be at the right age for the type of music that, the music that was coming out. I was at the right age. I had just enough pocket money to get us. I mean, it all went on records and LPs and sometimes Newcastle matches and all the rest. Mm-hmm. But I was so lucky to be around at that time because I could trace it from its sort of genesis. Ooh, Genesis. I mentioned Genesis there. Right the way through 1977 and through to the sort of end of 77, beginning of 78, when it was starting to sort of diversify. To me, that was great because even though the 77 punk was, it was great, it was an exciting time to be alive, I still used to like and play like stuff by early Roxy Music, and I still love Sparks to this day. And the quirkiness of Sparks and the Bowie, the electronic Eno, the Eno albums that Bowie did with like the Idiot Wakey Pop and things like that. And a lot of the post-punk bands, I would say, like start with say Ultravox, were using keyboards, magazines certainly. They were taking elements from the bands that I'd loved previously and still do. Mm-hmm. And they were using that in their sort of, as their part of their musical palette, you know, and expanded on that. So I was happy for, because it was a, some people thought it was a backward step, actually, going back to using keyboards, but not if, doesn't have to be Emerson, Lake and Palmer. If they're done well, you know, mm-hmm. it was great. And obviously you had bands like the Psychedelic Furs had the influence, had the, you know, the Bowie Velvet Underground thing going on. Obviously Joy Division, who, totally unique, absolutely fantastic, Unknown Pleasures. Killing Joke on their, and their brutal take on sort of punk music. Devo, can I not let Devo go unmentioned? There's mm-hmm. a band who not many people have heard of called Wall of Voodoo from, I think they were from California. They were great, Wall of Voodoo. They had a song out called Mexican Radio and an album out called Call of the West. And it was a mad, you can imagine if Devo were cowboys, basically, mm-hmm. and a bunch of cowboys, and they were given synthesizers and drum machines, yippee-yay and all this. And they were fantastic. Have to mention them.
So aside from sort of big name post-punk bands, were there any more unknown post-punk bands that you got into?
There probably was, but off the top of my head, because my memory's not great and we're going back a long time, if they hadn't stayed the test of time, well, Wall of Voodoo was one, actually. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were on the same record label as the Cramps. They came out with the same sort of scene as that, but so they sounded totally different. There probably was, oh yeah, Punishment of Luxury. How can I not mention
Punishment of Luxury?
Funny looks, well, yeah, I ended up supporting them once, years later, years and years down the line.
Yeah, they still do a lot of gigs. They've done one quite recently, actually. It was in Gateshead.
Where at?
Well, they did it with the Tyne Idols tour, but it was... It was the vocalist who was doing like a discussion with them, but then they started doing some selected gigs around that sort of area.
Because the Tyne Idols, I was there for about half an hour of that afternoon, because I went to see the Newtopians at the Black Bull, uh-huh. and I got told it was okay. I couldn't make the bus trip, actually, because my brother was up from Blackpool, and I haven't seen him for years, and we had to have a family tea. So I just me and Brett wanted to go and see the Newtopians, so we got told it was all right. Mm-hmm. And the bus was, what was nice actually, the bus pulled away, the cast had to finish the rest of the tour, and Jack and Phil just did basically the songs that I like.
Yeah.
So thank you for that, Jack.
I surely appreciate that. But when you saw Newtopians, what did you think? You know, like a father Excellent. And son post-punk band?
It was great. Obviously, I'm biased because I would like to think Jack is a friend of mine, actually. And what I was impressed with was the quality of the songwriting and how Phil, well, I know they've been going a few years ago now, from Phil being, his development has been It's great. It's like our own. We've got our own Stuart Adamson. Can I say that, Phil? We've got our own Stuart Adamson living locally, and he's a damn good. He's a damn good producer, mixer as well.
Yeah.
Because he did my. he did my CD. So thanks for that, Phil. No, and I like. I mean, I genuinely like the stuff, and I do sometimes think, oh, do I like it? Because I'm a biased, you know. But no, the stuff. It's well written. It's brilliantly produced, and they've. They're setting out for a certain sound, and they've achieved it that 80s with like a lot of reverb and all the rest of it, you know. I mean, if they're playing locally soon and I'm not playing, I'll probably go along and see them again, yet again.
So, you know, going back to 1980, you know, it's arguably the golden age of music, but do you think it was sort of like a...
Arguably.
a golden age for punk?
No. Because I know that there was the second wave of punk, and I'll be honest with you, I might make a few enemies here, but I just didn't get into it, and I didn't buy anything by those bands. Probably because I was there at the beginning, and it was like a shock to the music system, and I think it did blow itself out, and it had to diversify, which it did. The smarter bands diversified, whether you were the Clash going off. And doing whatever, like London Calling album or magazine and the soundscapes that they did, or Devo or whoever. And I think, because if I was 5 years younger in the likes of GBH and them came out, I probably would have got into it, because that would have been my first taste of punk music. But because it wasn't, I'd lived through it and I'd got older, and I was, I was walking around thinking I was Ian McCulloch out there and the Bunnymen or something, and not even Curtis Scott, I wouldn't. I wasn't that fed up. No, I don't knock it in any way, but it had no interest for us. I mean, the sort of shouty, bawly stuff, it had all been done, and I think it had been done very well in the early bands. I found, again, it's just my opinion, they were like the Pistols and the Clash. They were pointed. It was pointed. It was like arrow aimed, and I thought a lot of it. The later stuff would have had a more scattergun approach, and it was just shouting and bawling because they thought that's what punk should have sounded like.
Mm.
And I think the early stuff had more message. It was pointed, not message, but musically and lyrically. Whether it was, got to mention T.V. Smith's lyrics are great, brilliant. The adverts, great band, great songs, and they're lyrically brilliant. And there was an element that had been done before, but I just thought that the early stuff was more pointed, pinpoint.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned, like, if you were... you know, a bit younger when sort of the 80s bands came out, you would get into, well, you probably would have got into things like GBH and Discharge.
It would probably have been my first exposure to punk, you see, because I know a few people who were a bit younger than me, and it was theirs, and they got into them. Then they went back and played, Strangler's first album or something. They went the other way around.
Mm.
So, and I don't know how they feel, whether they find that the GBH and all this cronje and all that, if the earlier stuff came secondary to them, but that's just how it's me sort of theory behind it, man. You know, it had been done and it had been done brilliantly, and it's not knocking the bands, but they came along just a bit after the event.
Mm-hmm.
And music, and especially from the 77 up through to the 80s, it was moving at such a rapid pace, like the development of the bands and it was the start of the subgenres, you know?
Yeah.
You could be, you could have some band was flavour of the month in the NME, and then you'd go on holiday for a fortnight and come back, and people are, no, they're last, that's old hat. Then it's this new band has just come on the scene and think, well, it's only been a fortnight or 3 weeks, you know. It was, I mean, the development of some of the bands and some of the scenes was very, very rapid in the late 70s.
Mm-hmm. So, you yourself are in a cover band, Diamond Dogs.
That's correct. Woof woof.
Bit of info about Diamond Dogs.
A bit of information, right? I know you have to remember, I'm not an original band member, so really I can only speak for myself. You'll have to ask the wonderful and lovely and handsome Slim Frank Hardy for his take, because he is actually the only original band member. But I was helping out. The singer at the time had dropped them in, it, I think, to an extent. He'd give them like a month's notice or a fortnight's notice, and they didn't want to cancel any gigs or something along those lines. So I joined because I had been in a punky, glammy type of band earlier to help them out. and I sort of helped to know most of the songs, and I found in a nutshell it was great. I enjoyed it. When I joined, there were a lot. Well, it's not straighter, but they did a bit of Beatles and Stones and a bit of not Chuck Berry, but they did. They were a bit more rock and rolly, a bit more traditional.
Like classic rock, yeah.
But I mean, it's sort of developed now into sort of, because we've had a few band members sort of leave over the years, and few have joined. So now where we are now, it's more of a 70s review. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're called Diamond Dogs. And of course, we do a lot of Bowie stuff, and we do Roxy music and T-Rex and all this. But we, if it was released in the '70s, it's game for us. It's open season. You know, we do all the, we touch. You know, we do the Buzzcocks and the Clash and the Pistols and all this, and Magazine and a lot of glam rock, Roxy music and Sparks and all that. But we throw a few curveballs in as well. Mm-hmm. Bay City Rollers.
Just to mix it in. Well, Glenn Matlock would be a fan of you then, because he likes the Bay City Rollers.
Does he?
Yeah.
God.
He said in an interview a while ago that, well, I think it was John Lydon actually who pointed it out. Glenn wanted like a more Bay City Rollers type Sex Pistols. But of course that didn't work.
It would never have worked.
Exactly.
No worry, he got fired.
Of course.
Well, you know, each to their own. I mean, Diamond Dogs are a lot of fun. We all get on. I've got to say it. I mean, you know, we're pretty democratic. As far as I'm concerned, it's quite democratic as well. We all get a pitch in. We have lots of songs to choose from. We never do this. I can't remember the last time we did the same set twice.
All right.
You know, we've got one tonight. We've got one tomorrow in Whitley Bay, and there'll be about 6 or 7 song changes between the two nights. Mm-hmm. We'll shuffle around a bit.
So what does a general sort of set list consist of?
We try to balance it out. Sometimes, if we've played somewhere before and we're back there and we know the type of people that get in and that say, I mean, we do get the odd gig where we played one recently where I don't think anybody liked punk. Mm-hmm. It was more of a, like a working man's, not like an old clubby type of crowd, so we kept it as sort of the songs as familiar as we possibly could from our set list to,
yeah.
You know, I mean, and then, but we go to places sort of, you know, around Blythe, Whitley Bay, it's cracking, that's our sort of stomping ground, it's great up there, and we can basically get away with playing stuff like Magazine and sort of anything, mm-hmm. You know, the more obscure the better to some, and so the set will go with a more punky, hard-edged.
Yeah.
You know, there's certain songs that we keep in. We have to keep them in because, well, they are big hits to,
and they're known to them, yeah. Your audience, yeah.
Temple Tudors are. I don't think we've ever not done that one.
Mm-hmm.
But we do. We've got like set list rotation going on.
Mm-hmm. So, you mentioned before David Bowie was like a big part of Diamond Dogs. You know, how many songs would you say are Bowie in Diamond Dogs?
There's quite a few. We don't do them all on a night time. We have about 8, and I think we might have 8, nah, about 8. And mm-hmm. we'd probably do 4 or 5, and then the following night we might drop 3 of them and do the other 3. And we'll put them, they never come in at the same point of the set either. Mm-hmm. We used to open with Diamond Dogs, or we still do sometimes, the track Diamond Dogs, because we are Diamond Dogs.
Yeah.
And I mean, we haven't at the minute. We're giving that one a rest for now. We might do it tomorrow night, I don't know. But it's not. I don't think it's on tonight's set list, but mm-hmm. there you go.
So, next question. So, glam punk, like New York Dolls and things like that, you mentioned that, you know, you saw them on the TV and like their outfit and the look was just completely like mind-boggling, not amazing.
I was 14. It would be to any 14-year-old now, I think. Although I don't know. 14-year-olds now, it's probably just, they probably think it's like cheesy.
Yeah.
But then they weren't born in 1960 like I was.
Yeah.
With your dad. I remember being, when I saw Bowie doing Starman on Top of the Pops. Like, I know everybody's got their own, Maya has got their own. But do you remember when you saw Bowie doing Starman? I remember I was at my Uncle Peter's house and we, you know, Top of the Pops, the whole family were sitting around the television and he came on and I think I can't remember if my dad had me restrained. And I was 12. I think I was 12 and it was like the best thing. the best thing I'd ever seen in my life, because colour, he was smart Bowie, man, even beyond music. Colour television had just sort of been made affordable to certain households. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure the whole colour thing, it was because, you know, if it was in black and white, he probably would have had like a, I don't know, a monk's outfit on or something.
Yeah.
But because of colour television had just sort of, you know, been readily available, you know, I'm sure he thought, well, I'll get myself all coloured up. And it just looked looked amazing. And now it just looks sort of a bit camp and a bit, you know, I'm looking through rose-tinted glasses, remember.
Mm.
But at the time it was, and at the time punk as well. You see a punk walking down the street now and you might even go, all right, mate. But if you saw a punk walking down the street in Chesley Street in 1977 or 78, it was like you crossed the road. Well, I wouldn't, obviously.
Yeah.
I've got to tell you this one. It would have been 1978, I think. And I mean, I went home and my mum was crying in the kitchen. Oh, she was upset in the kitchen. I don't know if she was crying. I said, what's the matter, mum? She says, what's the matter, mum? She says, I was standing outside Barclays Bank with such and such from down the road. And she looked over and she said, look at the clip of that lad over the side of the road next to like Lipton's or somewhere. And she says, and I looked up and it was you. And she says, and I didn't have the guts to say, hey, that's my son. And I'd have said, oh, don't worry about it, mum. I get it all the time.
So that leads me on to something else. Was there much of like a scene in Chesley Street and sort of around there?
Not at all. It was it wasn't even a scene. It was a few punks in Durham. He had to go to Newcastle, and I didn't, to be honest, other than going to gigs, I didn't really go around. I've never gone around Newcastle a great deal. There was a place called Fowler's Yard in Durham. It was just a youth club, really, because you've got to bear in mind I'll have been 16 or 17.
Yeah.
And they used to put a few punk records on. The youth centre down Chesley Street, there was a DJ, was a lad called Duncan Carr. Yeah, I think he was about a year or two older than us. And I always remember sitting in the youth club. Bear in mind, it's a disco and it's loud and it's dark. And it was, you know, Kung Fu Fighting, played that one. And then he played Swing By, you know, the Doolies or something. And then he put New Rose on. I always remember hearing New Rose and thinking, bah, 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 bah. I need to buy that.
Yeah.
And cheers, Duncan.
So, you know, as an early punk, what were some of the gigs you got to see?
The first punk gig I went to was Iggy Pop at the City Hall in like very, very early in 1977. Bowie was playing keyboards, it was notable for that. But the first punk band I saw were the Support Band, obviously, who came on before him, and the Vibrators. So they were the first Support Band I saw. And I think I saw the Stranglers. It was only a week or two after that, the Stranglers played the City Hall. I think Rats was out. I think it was out. And the band called London was supporting, so I got to see them. I do remember, I actually had a horrible, it's chewed up now, but I had a cassette recording of that gig, which would have been rare as out if I still had it. Because it had, even though Rats and Ovechkins had just literally come out maybe that week or the week after. They did a lot of stuff that ended up on the next album, No More Heroes, that at the time you think, oh, I haven't heard this one. Mm. School Mom and a few others. And I think that some of them came out straightened out, which came out in singles, I think, later on in the year. I saw Iggy Pop twice that year, funnily enough. I saw the Stranglers twice. I think I saw the Ramones in 77. The Mayfair gigs, I can't remember. But I've still got the stubs for those bands. That's how I remember I saw them then, because I've got the ticket stubs.
Mm-hmm.
There might have been other bands that I just cannot remember.
Mm-hmm.
78, going into 78, I'm sure I saw the Ramones again in 78. People like Wayne County, the Electric Chairs. If I had money, if I'd had a punk tag, I'd go and watch it. The Rich Kids, who were after, obviously, Glenn Matlock. Rich Kids Magazine. The University of Newcastle used to put a lot of the punk bands on around those times. The Clash at the Poly. Going through a broken window to see the Clash. There was police out, riot, oh, it was scary. There was riot police outside, and somebody put a window out, huge plate glass window, and just walked straight through. There was maybe 20 of us got through before it was like cordoned off.
Yeah.
But did I see the Buzzcocks in 78? Maybe I did. I can't remember.
Mm-hmm. So what were the gigs like during that sort of early time? Were they very like chaotic or?
The City Hall once, no, not that I remember. the City Hall, there was a bit of poor going in your, you know, standing up and poor going in your seats. But the Mayfair ones were a bit more tasty. I went to see probably the most violent gig I've ever been to. Actually, I went to see Ultra. Believe it or not, this is Ultravox. I went to see Ultravox in. It was either late. I saw the Jam at the Mayfair in 77. Somebody threw a table off the balcony. I remember that. Like these huge tables. Luckily, the stage was from the back. You couldn't like get anything off on the stage. Yeah. But it came off the side. And not long after that, I went to see Ultravox when John Fox was in them. And somebody threw a bottle, and it split his head wide open, like across that. It looked like a red curtain just came down on his face. Oof. And he was doing his best Iggy Pop metallic KO taunting the audience thing after that. Given his due, I mean, he's 6'2", and I think he's, you know, mid duo probably would have scuttled off somewhere, but he stood his ground. And the pints and the. It was basically Friday night, heavy rock night.
Yeah.
And you had, you know, the DJ was playing Freebird by Lynyrd Skynyrd and all this. And then Ultravox came on and sang I Want to Be a Machine.
Yeah.
With a violin and a 12-string. And, and he said, we're finishing this set and we're going to do the encore and you can shove it if you don't like it. And he was covered in blood. The stage was about an inch deep and
drenched.
And so the Mayfair gigs were more like scary, I suppose. Mm. I remember going to see the Clash at the Mayfair, and I must have had a drink. It was the London Calling tour, because Arthur's thought it was a great gig, and I came out, and somebody had said that it was the most violent gig they'd ever been to. And apparently, somebody has a cassette recorder somewhere. I think they had to stop the songs a few times and I can't remember any of that, mind. Mm. But then I was probably. You know, I didn't drink a lot in them days, so when I did, I probably
was half pint wasted. So, on to the next part of that. So, were there any bands that you didn't get to see that you wish you really did?
Pistols. Never saw the Pistols, and the more I think about it, I mean, it's my bad. It's an error on my part. I never. They played the Middlesbrough Rock Garden in 1977 sometime, and I found out the day after, but it was the spot tour, so it was like a secret, there were secret gigs, and I found out the day after they played, and if I'd found out the day before, I would certainly have gone down on my motorbike and tried to get in. Whether I would have got in or not, it's another matter, because apparently it was people outside, you know, that found out in the, it was, you know, yeah, you were, this is twice, you know, it was as many people outside as I was in, but I would certainly have tried to get in. And I had a chance to see them, funnily enough, in 1996 at they were on the Phoenix Festival on the Sunday night. And I was actually down the Phoenix Festival to watch Bowie on the Friday. And Neil Young was on the Saturday and the Pistols were on the Sunday. But I think at the time I didn't have a lot of cash and I could only really afford to stay the one night.
Yeah.
Because I do remember thinking, well, if the Pistols had been on a Saturday, I would have maybe been able to afford to stay down for the two nights and Neil Young and like, yeah. All the hippies watch him, and because they were on the Sunday, but looking back, I should have just for the sake of a few bob, mm-hmm. 50 or 100 quid or something, I should have just stayed down,
yeah.
And because the weather was really, really nice as well, I would have just suffered hay fever for 3 days, but I would have got to
see, but it would have been worth it.
Sneezing on people's, well, it's all snot and that, isn't it? So, I mean, sneezing on, you know, that's punk and it's snot flying everywhere, but yeah, the Pistols, I never got to see. Wall of Voodoo. I saw Wall of Voodoo, but not the original singer, Stan Ridgway. Mm-hmm. And I would have liked that. Never got, all right, glam rock. Never got to see, never saw T-Rex. I'm a bit disappointed I never saw T-Rex. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I can't think of anybody musically, which from whatever genre, I've liked over, you know, I think I've seen just about everybody. Mm-hmm. Probably more than once.
So, present gigs, you know, I saw a while ago that you went to the Slaughter and the Dogs gig at Newcastle.
Aye.
And what was that like?
It's all right. It's good. I saw them down. I saw them in 1980 with a different singer. I think they were on either with the Vibrators or the UK Subs or something like that in the Mayfair, Newcastle, or it might even have been the Roots. And I remember them being good, but they didn't have the original singer. But so you know, it was a good night out. And I saw them at the Rebellion Festival in Blackpool a few years ago now, and I thought, oh, they were great. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people didn't like them, funnily enough, because they did a few glam rock covers, but I mean, hey, you know, it's not to like. Mm-hmm. And so I enjoyed them. I enjoyed them at the O2. Yeah, they were good.
Okay, so the last question. So, what do you think about sort of punk nowadays and the bands that are emerging? Do you think it's more like alive now than it was in the 70s?
That's an interesting question, because I'll be honest with you here. I very rarely play punk now in the house. I love to hear it when it's me going out music. I listen to it all night when we're out, or when we're playing it, or when I'm watching a band playing it, or if it comes on a jukebox, because I think a lot of it for me is nostalgic. Mm-hmm. And I remember you hear, I don't know, it could be an album track by Penetration or something, you think, God, I remember this Luminous Green vinyl, and I saw them at Redden. And it's like looking at old photographs and having a laugh.
Yeah.
See what I was wearing. See what I was listening to then. And I love it from that perspective. But I mean, now, it's weird. It's probably, I don't know if a lot of people realise, it was never very, very, it was never massively popular at the time, you know. It was a niche. It was like a genre, and people thought that, even I thought, maybe it might last a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it had the sort of late 80s, early 90s when it went a bit pear-shaped. But then it's had a resurgence. It's come full circle. And a lot of the bands that weren't particularly popular other than outside, you know, the music press, would probably clean up like the Skids.
Yeah.
Reformed. 30-odd years?
Something.
They maybe was an exception. I mean, because they had the tunes they always did have, and they're fantastic, basically. They had Stuart Adamson. You know, they're as popular now as they were 30, 40 years ago. So punk is probably more popular now, I would say. Maybe it has a different name to somebody younger, a different generation to me. A younger generation might call it under a different, like, a name. Because I know there's bands like The Slaves and all these.
Yeah.
But it's looking healthy at the minute.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot to mention, what another great thing about the post-punk. Just when I mentioned Stuart Adamson, another great thing about post-punk was some of the musicianship, some of the guitarists coming out of the post-punk, they sort of rewrote the rule book for guitars brilliantly. You got to mention John McGeoch, Stuart Adamson, yeah. Geordie Walker, John McKay, Keith Levine, even the Edge is good, man. The Edge is good, you know. Take his effects pedals off him, he's still good. Just Bono, I don't like. you know, and that came with a new sort of language, guitar-wise,
mm-hmm.
you know, rewriting and getting back to Bebop Deluxe. Started it with Bebop Deluxe. Bill Nelson was in Bebop Deluxe, and he went to become a fifth member of the Skids, you know. So,
yeah.
Hey, don't knock old Bill.
Well, thank you very much for doing this little discussion.
It's been my pleasure.
So next week I'll have another guest, so listen out for it.
Who is it?
Oh, I don't know, yes.
Oh, you don't know,
all right. Got to source it first.
I was excited there, I thought we were going to find out who it was.
Anyway, until next time, goodbye.